Good evening, everyone. It's time to take charge of your life. Hello, this is marriage and family therapist Eleanor Barbaro, your host, inviting you to take charge of your life on WDIY. The theme of this program is that so many events in life happen to us over which we have no control. Our only control is our response to life's situations. It is often said that 90% of life's events happen to us, and 10% is what we make happen. Tonight, we talk about how we can reverse that figure and perhaps make 90% of life what we make happen. Tonight, we talk about how do we give the greatest gift of all to ourselves and to our families, which may not cost money, but rather a new understanding of ourselves, of recovering from trauma, or of recovering from loss and grief, and even of recreating our body image without surgery or liposuction. My guest this evening is Edie Weidenstein, a licensed social worker, a coach for blissful living, an interfaith minister, and the author of the Bliss Mistress Guide to Transforming the Ordinary into the Extraordinary. Tonight, Edie Weidenstein will help us to explore the greatest gift of all, the gift we can give to ourselves, a greater understanding and a spiritual embracement of all, and an ability to deal with events around us. Welcome, Edie Weidenstein, to WDIY.
Hi, Ellie. Thank you for having me on your show. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. And, you know, we're facing very difficult times now. We are in the midst of enjoying the holidays. But underneath that, there's always a growing concern of economics, of things we really can't control. And I'm just wondering, how did you reach this ability to look at life with a blissful overtone?
Well, It's a work in progress, like I am, like you are, and it evolved over time. I was really blessed to have grown up in a very loving household with parents with an intact marriage. Both of them have since passed, but they were lifelong sweethearts. My dad died in 2008, my mom in 2010, so I am now an adult orphan, is how I look at it, at 54 years old. But they gave me a remarkable ability to be resilient and to bounce back from whatever could happen, because they did it. They modeled it. They lost both of their fathers early on. They lost both of their mothers as they were raising my sister and myself. So I saw in them a remarkable ability to love, to be steadfast, to be solid and supported in the face of all of the losses that they experienced. So fast forward to 1992. I became a therapist. I hadn't become an interfaith minister yet, but I'd become a therapist, a social worker, degrees in psychology and social work. So I had the head stuff. I had the book knowledge about how to deal with loss, and I'd worked with countless clients along those lines. But it wasn't until it happened in my own life that it became grounded in reality, in something solid and authentic. My husband and I, in 1998, had started a magazine called Visions, and some of your listeners may have been familiar with it. We published it from 1988 to 1998, and the focus was holistic health, wellness, spirituality, and transformation. And through that, I had the amazing opportunity to interview some of the most incredible movers and shakers on the planet, which I can talk to you about a little bit later, but I'm setting the story up here. So in 88, we started the magazine. In 1990, we moved down to South Florida. My parents had just retired. We moved down there to be with them and also to enjoy the sunshine and to create a second regional edition of our magazine. We figured South Florida lifestyle, you know, relaxed, healthy, health conscious. In February of 1992, we adopted our son, Adam, who was 5 at the time and is now 25. In March of 1992, I had an ectopic pregnancy. And for those of your listeners who may not know what that is, the baby develops in a fallopian tube, which is not meant to carry a full-grown child. And it ruptured, and I almost hemorrhaged to death. I didn't even know I was pregnant at the time. In May of that year, Michael was diagnosed with hepatitis C. And we came upon that diagnosis kind of serendipitously, and I'm grateful for it. We had decided to become bone marrow donors. There was a child in our community, and they were looking for donors. So we got tested. Michael tested positive for hep C, and that's when the journey continued. So fast forward to August of 1992, we had just purchased our home, our first home in Homestead, Florida. And for those of you who have met me and may sound familiar, that was the site of Hurricane Andrew in August of 92, 20 years ago. We lost our home, and with it, the South Florida regional edition of our magazine. So we had a series of life events, illness, surgery, serious health diagnosis, financial challenges, loss of business, loss of home, life-threatening, life-challenging diagnosis for my husband. And then, you know, the positive was the adoption of our son, but it was still a big life change.
So what you're talking about, Edie, what you're talking about is that so many things happen to us, which is what I mentioned in the beginning, that you have no control over. You didn't have control over the hurricane. You don't have control over your husband's diagnosis. And that happened to be, as you put, serendipitous, because had you not been organ donors, you would not have found out that information.
Right.
And so
right.
The question is, so what you're saying is, and my next question is, how do you reframe it so that you become resilient? And so resiliency can lead to bliss.
Well, that's a good word. I love the word reframe because friends of mine call me the queen of reframe. And when you think about the idea of reframing, you can look at a picture and you can have the exact same picture with two different kinds of frames around it. You can have a simple, plain wooden frame, or you can have an ornate, elaborate gold leaf frame. The picture is still the picture, no matter what. But the frame reflects how you look at the picture. So I could say, why us? This isn't fair. This sucks. And yeah, I did. I did a little bit of that, a little bit of inner temper tantruming, like, oh, come on, what's this about? And then I said, all right, why not us? Why should we be any different from anybody else on the planet that experiences life challenges? It's just that they happen so close together and so many layers one on top of the other.
So what
and
you're
it
saying,
felt like a test.
So, yes, what you're saying, Edie, is that it's not that bad things don't happen to us. It's that we have to find a way to so that they don't overcome us and don't take over our lives, that we can find a way to live the life that we want to live with all of these things in our past.
Oh, yeah. And it's not in spite of. At first I thought it was in spite of, but I look at it now as because of.
Mm.
When Michael was diagnosed, he had been going to the New Seminary, which is an interfaith seminary in New York City. He was training to become an interfaith minister. And I casually studied along with him. We couldn't afford for both of us to do it. And frankly, I had no thoughts of becoming clergy. I grew up going to synagogue, and I remember my father saying, you know, it's a thankless job when you're a rabbi. And I imagined it's no different for priests and ministers and imams and monks, and, you know, that it could be a thankless job. But Michael really wanted to do this, so I supported him in it. So I would read to him when he would fall asleep. I would type his papers because he had neuropathy in his hands. He couldn't always feel the keyboard. I would study along with him, little knowing why at the time. Literally, when he was in the ICU in a coma waiting for a liver transplant that never happened, and I lived in the hospital with him. It was at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital. I lived there in the ICU with him for 5.5 weeks and didn't sleep at home till the night he died. I would have these God wrestling sessions where God and I would converse, and I would say, he's mine and you can't have him. And God said, uh-uh, he's mine and he's on loan to you like everyone else in your life. Now, that was a big reframe.
Now, I just want to let my listening audience, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Take Charge of Your Life. And my guest this evening is the remarkable Edie Weinstein, who is the author of The Bliss Mistress Guide to Transforming the Ordinary into the Extraordinary. And you were just saying, you know, your argument reminds me of the argument with Jacob's Ladder and the Angel.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought about. And there's actually a book called God Wrestling, and I'm trying to remember who wrote it, but I like that term. But it helps me appreciate everybody. So I would have these dialogues or monologues, because I don't believe we're separate from God, so sometimes I call them monologues. And the point at which I knew Michael was going to die, you know, every day I would say, I'd look in the mirror in the bathroom in the family waiting room, and I would say, is this the face of a woman about to lose her husband? And every day I kept hearing no. And then the night before he died, I heard yes. And I said, okay, I've got to prepare myself and I've got to prepare Adam for this, our son, who was 11 at the time. And so that the next morning, they took him off life support, and literally, when the life support was disconnected, I heard what I call the voice for God. Now, having been a psychiatric social worker for a lot of years, I know the difference between spiritual guidance and psychotic voices. This is not a psychotic voice. But it said, call the seminary and ask to finish what Michael started. So I know exactly what that meant. So I called a couple of days after his funeral, and they invited me to join the class. I got a full scholarship, bless them for that. I didn't even ask for it. They offered it. And they said, you're welcome to join Michael's class and graduate with it on two conditions. One is that you're doing it for yourself, too, and not just for him. And the other is that you've got to do the first year's work all over again that he did, and then the second year's work back-to-back, or just wait till the following year. I said, no, I'm going to do it all at once. So I did 2 years' worth of study in 5 months, and that was my therapy. I didn't go to grief counseling. I mean, that was my grief therapy. I don't advise that for everybody. I'm a recovering workaholic, so my tendency is to push through grief by action. I don't recommend that for everybody. And, you know, people grieve at their own pace. So that was part of what got me through, too.
So you really listened to an inner voice that guided you, and you really decided to live the life you were meant to lead with Michael.
Yeah, well, the life that we were meant to lead together in body, and then afterwards, he's around. I mean, I haven't felt married in a lot of years. I have not remarried. I'm still, blissfully single, but, welcoming a partner that I can share this amazing life with. But his influence, his energy, whatever the reasons were we came together, are still there. We're still working it together a little bit.
So each of us, what you're saying is, in our own way, have to find a way to find the message in what is ever happening to us. Because life doesn't happen just like that. It's not... Somehow or other, what you're saying is everything happens with a reason and with something behind it. And if for us to become resilient, we need to find the message in what's happening.
That's why Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning, has been so influential, because this is a man who survived the Holocaust, lost his family, decided that, I forget what the exact quote was, but that the Nazis could imprison his body, but they couldn't make him hate, they couldn't touch his mind, his heart, and he decided what this experience meant, and he became what I call a resilient thriver, which is to take his life lessons and his pain and transmute it into something beautiful that he could share with other people, and that's my work.
We will talk more with Edie Weinstein when we return to Take Charge of Your Life on WDIY.
Many organizations are worthy of your financial support this time of year. We appreciate your considering WDIY among them. Listener support makes the news and music on WDIY possible. Make your tax-deductible gift online at WDIY.org or call us at 610-694-8100. And thank you for your support.
Welcome back to Take Charge of Your Life. Hello, this is Eleanor Bobrow, your host. And this evening we're talking with a very special young woman who has written a very interesting book called The Bliss Mistress Guide to Transforming the Ordinary into the Extraordinary. In the first half of the program, we heard of Edie's own challenges that she faced and how she transformed them from very difficult times, from the death of her husband, to making a completely different life for herself. And using the word resiliency, she did not choose to mourn, but she chose to follow in the footsteps of her husband and create a life they would have both led together. Edie, how can we, as ordinary people, facing the trials and tribulations as we do in these hard times, financial times, times of illness, times of great stress in the papers, How do we make our own personal attempt to create resiliency as you did?
Well, I can't say that everybody would do it the way that I would do it. And as an interfaith minister, I like to say that I don't have the right to tell anybody what to believe spiritually. But part of what got me through all of this was my spiritual connection, faith, whatever you want to call it, knowing that there was some source, support, whatever it was that was there that was going to get me through this. And knowing that I had the love and support of family and friends, knowing that I had already proven to myself that I could get through some challenges. I had some health challenges as a child as well. And seeing my parents as role models for getting through things. That's part of what it was. I also didn't allow myself to get sucked down into poor me. And it's so easy to do that. I would have had people expecting that I would. But I chose to look at it differently. You used the term reframing a little while ago. I was able to reframe the situation and say, yes, this happened, and yes, it's hurtful and painful and challenging, and I know I'm going to get through it. So I used a lot of the tools that I developed over the years as a therapist, the positive self-talk, reminding myself of what's still left, not what was lost, counting my blessings, being able to clearly see what assets I had, not just financial assets, but emotional, mental resources that I had, asking for support, good self-care, that got me through it. And I've had financial challenges. I've raised a child alone, since he was 11, and my son is now 25, and we're still in the same house. I've been able to pay my bills. I've been able to see what's out there, what I could do. So I encourage people to see what they still have, even in the midst of the losses they might be facing. I encourage them to take a look at, even while they're saying, yes, I may have lost my job or my health insurance or my car or my house, or I have plenty of people in my personal life that are going through this, let alone people in my professional life. And I encourage them to do exactly the same thing that I'm telling you now, is to be able to say, okay, what's still working? And what are some practical steps I can take to turn my life around? For some people, it means starting a whole new career. If their old career, if they lost their job, okay, now what can I do to recreate my life? That helps, to be able to see what skills I have that are transferable to a new life. So I'd recommend that. And for some people, it means cutting back financially, looking at what they may be wasting money on instead of investing money in, or themselves, investing in themselves. So those are some of the things that I teach, that I teach people to do, and to recognize that ultimately, and I know this may sound bizarre given what happened in Connecticut on Friday, given what's happening all around the world, I believe, and again, this is just a personal belief, that everything happens for the highest good. Even if we can't see it at the time, even if it's traumatic, even if it's horrible, I can always find something positive in anything that happens in my life, and I teach other people to do that as well.
Now, I'm just wondering, can you give us an example how you have you helped other people, either suffering financially or suffering emotionally, in using this particular frame so that they can find the bliss in their life and find their resiliency? Yeah. Can you give us an example of somebody?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I can give you several. Up until this past June, I worked for 11 years in a psychiatric hospital as a social worker. And I've worked with people with all different types of mental health diagnoses. Everything from schizophrenia to psychosis, depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, suicidality. And with each one of them, to the best of their ability to grasp it, depending on their condition, I've used these techniques with them, and I've had people come back and tell me, or I've gotten phone calls, or I've run into them out in a store somewhere, and they've shared with me, and again, I'm not, as a licensed social worker, I can't acknowledge where I know them from, but some of them have come up to me and said, guess what? I've turned my life around. I'm clean and sober. I'm starting a new job. My relationships are better. I've decided to live, those kind of things. So, and again, I don't take credit for it. It's a shared experience. They had to be invested in it for it to work. So I've had multiple situations like that I got a letter recently from an outpatient client that I've worked with who said that he started a new job and it's exactly what he wanted, exactly the way that he and I had worked it out and talked through it in his sessions with me. And he's doing very well. I've had coaching clients that have been able to develop and manifest what it is that they say that they want. I've worked with friends, and again, it's cooperative, collaborative effort. I'm not saying that it's all me. It's partly me,
but you guidance. So, for example, yeah. how do you have steps that we can take? Because number one, we can purchase your book. Tell us the name of the book again.
The book is The Bliss Mistress Guide to Transforming the Ordinary into the Extraordinary. And you can order it online on Amazon.com, either handheld copy or Kindle. Also BarnesandNoble.com, you can get it there. They are now in more local bookstores. I'm based in Upper Bucks County, like between Doylestown and Quakertown, and I'm getting them out into local stores as well. But step by step, the first thing I would say is take a look at where you are right now, because you can only start where you are right now. My tendency is to be 10 steps ahead of myself. But if you could say, all right, take an inventory. Where is my life now? How are my relationships? And I'm not just talking about romantic relationships. I'm talking about family, friends, coworkers. What's my relationship with the God of my understanding if I have a spiritual practice? What's my relationship with myself? And what would someone, and I ask myself this question all the time, what would someone have to believe in order to have the life that I'm living now? What would I have to believe about myself, my abilities, luck, the world, whatever it is? Because my contention is we shape the world around us. We feed the collective soup pot, as it were, with our emotions, with our beliefs, with our fears. So I prefer to feed it good stuff and have it taste good, rather than have it be bitter or too salty or too bland. So, again, take an inventory. Where are you now? Then the next step is, what do you want to be from now? A year from now, or 6 months, or 10 years from now? And see yourself. Embody that. Use all of your senses to be able to experience what would it be like to have the life of my dreams and desires. And I use the term manifest, M-A-N-N-A, like manna from heaven, to manifest the lives of your... No, I didn't make it up. My friend Kim years ago used that word, but I love it. I swiped it from her. I give her credit for it, though. But it's the idea of manifesting what it is you want in your life. So I teach people how to do that. I've taught workshops on that subject.
Give us one hint on how to make the dream and desire that we might have, maybe we've put it on the shelf and we haven't thought about it. Maybe you want to start a business. Maybe somebody wants to start an acting career or do something that they haven't really done. But it's been if only we have these things in our minds or in our hearts, and we say, oh, if only, oh, it's not the right time. So give us an idea how we can put a sparkle into it.
Sure. Well, you got to put legs under it, too. Whatever your dream and your vision is, you can be the most amazing visionary in the world, but you have to take the action steps, too. But it starts with the vision. And it's not just, ocular eye vision. It's feeling it, seeing it, being it, putting yourself into that experience, whether it's in the form of doing a meditation or what I do, I call it automatic, I didn't create this term, but automatic writing, where I'll say, how can I experience this particular life? How can I write my next book? How can I, speak in front of 1,000 people? And then just close my eyes and type, and I type faster than I write. So just type it out or write it out. How can I become a performer that sings in Carnegie Hall? That's not my dream. Maybe somebody else, that's not my dream. But, how can I do that? And just envision it, embody it. What would it feel like, taste like, smell like, sound like to be up there in Carnegie Hall? What would it be like to create a cure for cancer? And usually the dreams that we have aren't about the dream itself. It's about the quality of it. How will I feel when I have this dream? And let that fuel you. When I did the interview with the Dalai Lama, it took me 20 years to acquire that time with him. And I planted a lot of seeds. I used vision boards, which is a collage. You get cardboard and You cut out pictures, and I had pictures of the Dalai Lama on there. I wrote questions as if I'd be interviewing him the next day. I told people I was going to do this. And eventually, in July of 2008, is when he came to Lehigh University, which I didn't see him there, but he came to the Kimmel Center in Philadelphia. And I saw him there, and then the next day interviewed him in his hotel room, along with only one other journalist in the Philadelphia area. There was two of us that were granted an interview with him, and the other was a gentleman from the Philadelphia Inquirer, David O'Reilly, who I just loved spending time with. So we had an audience with His Holiness, and I did the interview. And it is in the book. It is in the Bliss Mistress Guide, but it's the entire interview. And even to this day, it feels surrealistic. But, I mean, who knows whether it was meant to be, whether it was destined to happen, and I just had to go through the motions,
however,
whether going through the motions made it happen.
You planned for this. In other words, you visualized it. You put it up on a board. You didn't know when it was going to happen, but somehow or other, you made up your mind internally. Internally, it's not that if somehow or other – you wanted to manifest this as a possibility. And somehow or other, I thought you went to the Himalayas.
Oh, I wish I had. I was in Philadelphia.
But is somehow or other it by design or what? He came to the area. He came to the Philadelphia area. Yeah. And there was the possibility which you took advantage of and you made it happen. And what you're saying, Edie, and for all of us, is that we need to have a vision for ourselves. That it's true. We have to acknowledge what's going on around us and what's going on in our lives, the reality. We can't deny that. But we need to develop a vision for ourselves. So I want to thank you, Edie Weinstein, for helping us to see that while we cannot be in charge of what happens to us, we can be in charge of our own wellness, our relationships, our spiritual creativity, our time management, and the way we think about ourselves and create resiliency. And thank you for giving us a new way of thinking to help take charge of our lives by transforming the ordinary into the extraordinary. Thank you so much, Edie Weinstein, author of Transforming the Ordinary into the Extraordinary. To contact Edie, her website is liveinjoy.org. Thank you again for listening. Thank you, Neil Heaver, producer. See you all on the radio next Monday evening at 6:30 p.m. when I again invite you to take charge of your life on WDIY.